All right, everybody, welcome to the show. I'm your host, Jonathan Moody, and welcome to 80s Horror Films. I'm really excited. We've got a fun show today. We're going to be talking Christmas Evil, which was Rebecca's choice, by the way. So,
of course, was it?
Yeah, it was your choice. She doesn't even remember. But we have Rebecca Reinhardt on the show. How are you doing, Rebecca?
I'm great.
And we have our other co-host, Joe Gonzalez. How are you doing, Joe?
I'm good.
All right. And we might have Julianne later. I don't know. She's writing to me right now. So
she's
having
some technical difficulties in Nevada. They're having rain, not snow like everybody else. They're having rain issues.
Yeah, we have had snow issues at in Richmond area of Virginia. I'm back in Virginia right now. But we haven't had it over here in Williamsburg. So fingers crossed, you know, because people in Virginia don't drive well in the snow, even though they've been used to it for years, they still suck at it. So,
yeah,
you know, I don't know how it is in Indiana or
pretty much the same. Like people act like the first snow, they act like they've never seen snow before.
Right, right. Joe, you're in California. So, have you ever been to where it snows?
Yeah, I've been up to Tehachapi. I live an hour and a half north of LA, so kind of up towards the mountains a little bit. And it snows up there every year. It hasn't yet. It normally does like January and February is when it snows. So, but yeah. It's fun. It's okay. It's cold and wet. So,
all right. So Julianne just wrote to me. She said she doesn't want to break the broadcast or interrupt. She just tried and she could not see us or hear us. So, and she can't.
That makes it very difficult then.
Yeah, see or hear. Like even just seeing would be bad because like hearing we can understand. Seeing we don't need to see you if you're just speaking into the microphone. But yeah, you need to at least hear what we're saying to have the conversation. So I just said, oh, but it's okay. So let's talk about Christmas Evil. So it was Rebecca Reinhardt's idea and she doesn't remember
I think the whole idea was we asked what we were going to talk about. And I said, everybody always talks about Silent Night, Deadly Night.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I did. I now remember that I said I kind of suggested it. I just didn't realize that it was like all on me.
Well, I had never seen it, so it was a good reason for me to see it. Joe, you said you hadn't seen it either, right?
No, it was my first time. I never even heard about it before. So.
Oh, wow.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Okay.
I'd at least heard. I remember going to the video store back in the 90s and early 2000s and seeing, because the video store, there was one video store in my town that was run by a guy named, his name was Ed, and he loved like just really cult movies and stuff, you know? And so he got a, he would stock up on these cult films. And one of the ones I'd always see is Christmas Evil. And I would always remember the picture of the Santa with the, like, I think it was an axe in his hand.
Yeah.
Yeah. Going down the chimney. And I did not know they actually have that in the movie, you know, like that wasn't just marketing. Cause nowadays when you see, we see a poster most of the time, it has nothing to do with the movie.
Oh, and the 1980s were just horrible about it. I mean, they would put people on the poster that weren't even in the movie.
It was collagey. It was like a big, really bad high school collage almost.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I mean, like you think about like Slumber Party Massacre 2, like two of the girls aren't even the girls in the movie, you know? I mean, they use like models for half of the stuff. So yeah, like it is very shocking when it's like, oh, that's actually in the movie.
Right. So, you know, it was a shock when I watched it. I didn't think there was going to be in there, but I have a dog in my room now, apparently.
All right.
Alrighty. Anyway, continuing on, I thought that was great. I thought that was amazing that they were able to put that in the movie because I really liked that picture, You know, I was excited for that. But then when I started watching it, I was like, it didn't seem like it was going to go in that direction at all. Like, he wasn't ever going to go into people's houses. He was, and when that happened, that one scene of him going into the house was pretty freaking awesome. So I guess we'll get to that. Rebecca, please tell us like the story of like what it's about.
Okay. So this was also called You Better Watch Out. Then later called Christmas Evil. So this is about a guy who, and this is kind of a common theme, I think, in a lot of these movies, a guy who dad dresses up like Santa to surprise the boys, and mom's all like, oh, hey, look, it's Santa, you know? And then the boy sneaks down later and he sees mommy and Santa Claus getting it on by the tree.
Which isn't that, that's a song though, right? Like I saw mommy
kissing Santa Claus.
Right.
A little bit more than that.
That was that I thought.
Hey, but she figured out how to get better presents. So you can't hate on mom for that.
Yeah.
Well, here's the thing. Like because of that song, I've never thought about how like messed up that would make a kid. You know, like if you saw your mom getting it on with Santa, like would that like screw
that would dread? That would and apparently according to this movie the answer is yes. So we fast forward to modern day. The boys are now adults. The one brother and his family live in the same house, in the family house, and Harry Harry's the one who saw things. Harry's the one who's kind of screwed up in the head, works at a toy shop, lives alone. He's pretty maladjusted. Nobody really seems to like him. No friends and all that type of stuff.
He might also be a little autistic, like the way that I think he did it a little bit, maybe.
I'm going to say this. Okay. So the description says that basically like a guy, he finally breaks mentally and goes on a killing spree on Christmas Eve. That's not how I always saw it.
Mm-hmm.
And I will probably get to this a little bit more, but the ending changes everything in my mind. And so I don't know that he really was crazy. I think they tried it. Like they leave that open for interpretation as to whether or not he was messed up at all.
Mm-hmm.
Or if he somehow he was one of Santa's helpers or something. I mean, but we'll get to that ending. That ending just changes the entire freaking movie.
I know. I mean, so we'll talk about that because that does come up for the ending. But I really like the Wikipedia thing for it. Did you guys read the Wikipedia stuff for it? They really go into the plot. And one of the things they say, which I was like, they never said this in the movie, right? So this is just somebody's interpretation of the story, right? But they said on Christmas Eve, while gluing a Santa beard to his face, he enters a fugue state that has him convinced that he truly is Santa Claus. Donned in a Santa suit, Harry starts doing his rounds on the van that is decorated with the sleigh picture. And that he believes to have been trained by Santa Claus's reindeer.
So, I think that's definitely someone's interpretation. It could be.
But that's the thing. I think that's what, because if you guys know this or not, I did look into this. Apparently the director, Lewis Jackson, right? He came up with the idea when he was smoking a joint.
Well, I've always had a theory that all of the snow in this movie was actually cocaine.
Right. So that makes sense.
Yeah.
But I don't know. So anyway, the point is like he, you know, came up with this idea, and back in 1970, before Black Christmas came out, it was just like he thought an idea of Santa Claus with a knife would be very funny. Mm-hmm. You know, and stuff. So he just started doing drafts and drafts of it. And then, like, nobody wanted it. Like, nobody was interested.
I wonder why.
Right. And then comes this little movie, this little teeny tiny movie. I don't know if you guys have heard of it. It's called Halloween. And that movie kind of breaks records and becomes this big hit. And they were like, okay, we'll do it. Because if you look at the poster, it says on the original poster, it says first came Halloween, then Friday the 13th, and now Christmas Evil.
Yeah. Because everybody at this point in time was trying to bank on the holiday thing. The My Bloody Valentine, April Fool's Day was a little bit later. But yeah, this was definitely, early holiday horror, because this was 81. I don't know if we mentioned that or not. Why not? You have this idea. This was before Silent Night, Deadly Night, and before the whole, you know, witch hunt with all of that, with Roger Ebert and whatnot. So
I remember hearing about that.
Yeah, that was a huge thing, because I was 8 at that point in time. And that's the only reason I ever wanted to watch that movie. Like, because, you know, it was this whole uprising, like, oh my gosh, Santa as a killer. You know, you're ruining Santa for our children. And like, the kids were all like, oh no, now I got to see this. You know, right. All Roger Ebert had to do was say that something was like, you know, depraved before, you know. For talking about that one, but that movie is actually a very good, serious movie, but they made it into a cult hit. All these like witch hunters did, basically.
I think the guy who writes a movie called Beyond the Valley of the Dolls, you know, should not go around telling people they've made a depraved movie.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm buying when I get back. A friend of mine's got a copy of Life Itself, the Roger Ebert documentary. I'm hoping that it does talk a little bit about his, you know, the stuff that he did, you know, that.
Yeah. And you can watch a lot of those online.
Okay.
Cool. Yeah. You can watch a lot of his reviews of like these movies, like a lot of the Friday the 13th and stuff where he was just, I mean, he just talks about this is like the fall of our civilization. And, you know, I mean, he just really, really hated horror movies, especially slashers. But I think this, this one flew under his radar, I think. This was not a very big movie by any stretch.
Definitely. Yeah, it wasn't a big movie. I don't think, like, Joe didn't even know about it. I only knew about it through the pictures and stuff. So I know it has a Blu-ray. You can get a Blu-ray of it on through Vinegar Syndrome. And it's got, like, commentaries and other stuff on the making of it. And so I think that's really cool.
So, okay. So if I can just like go back then, okay. I've seen it. I've only seen this maybe a half dozen times. I do not watch Christmas movies except for December, whether they're horror or not. You hum Jingle Bells in February, I'm going to punch you. Like I'm like December is the only time that I do Christmas stuff. So I've only watched this maybe 6 or 7 times. I watch it, you know, once a year. And I've had a couple different little interpretations, but I've never really talked about it with anybody. Like, did you guys take that at face value that he was just deranged? Because that was never my impression until maybe this time of watching it.
I did. I thought he just kind of had what they describe as a mental break, because what he saw was like, hey, this isn't right. That's not Daddy. That's Santa Claus. What are you doing? Kind of. And he really held on to that, like, forever. It really affected his life. I think he just got to a point where he just, you know, was just done with
it. Clicked.
Yeah.
Right. I see a lot of Psycho in this movie, which was, yes. You know, I think was a very big inspiration to, you know, to Lewis, the director, because it feels like sort of if you look at Norman Bates is just a guy who was, he had like a really weird fucking traumatic stuff with his mother. I don't even know, like, because they never explain in Psycho exactly what happens to her mother, to his mother, but his mother's dead and inside his house and he's living with them like she's still alive. He can hear voices, whatever. You look at this movie, the kid doesn't see, you know, he's not hearing things. The guy's not hearing things. He's just most of the people are calling him, like, basically a schmuck guy. You know, he's the toy guy that, he wants everything to be, you know, right? Like,
who keeps a naughty and nice book.
Yes. And he tells the photo, you can't see this.
Yeah, which is creepy as hell. But that's the other thing that I always kind of thought, that maybe he was one of Santa's helpers who kind of went a little awry.
Well, I kind of, I can see why you'd say that. There's a part in the movie, I forget which guy it is, but he talks about how Santa originated from like Sweden, like the folklore over there, and how it, you know, it basically came to New York, and then we twisted it into whatever we wanted, basically. So I kind of see what you're saying with that, because I remember that little clip from it and remember like thinking that maybe that was going to be something, like it was going to lead into more of the movie.
Because they basically said like in the 20s or the 30s, like it came to New York and like some magazine picked it up. I can't remember which one. It was like the New Yorker or something. And they bastardized everything and basically invented the Santa that we know now. But that's not where the legend came from. Like the legend, like it's not true to the legend.
Okay. Right? So there's two things I would say with that. If you wanted to go with the Santa's helper route, he would have to be adopted, you know, like why would his family not know that this is, you know, that this is what he is, right?
But why not, you know, I mean, why would he have to be adopted? Like, I mean, why couldn't he have just been like a chosen one? Or
well, like
where, and we do like, know that he isn't adopted anyway,
but there was never a line of like, you're not even really my brother, you know, or something, which would have been great for that. But also, you know, there's no scenes of anything that could like actually, other than him doing the naughty or nice list. I mean, he's lived in that town. He's grown up there. You know, he's never gone off that anybody's ever said, you know, there's no real proof that he's ever like, you know, that he is chosen or that he's been part of this thing. He's just a guy who dresses up like Santa because he's going crazy. That is my only interpretation I could get from the movie.
And that's totally, totally valid, you know?
Right.
I mean, but he does, I mean, it comes down to that ending. Was it just his van flying off the bridge, or was it starting to fly? You know, I don't know. Maybe this is like my pseudo like magical child like wonderment or something.
He was like calling the reindeer's names out, wasn't he? Like,
yeah.
Maybe that was a delusion. You know, like maybe he was having like a delusion or something, and was like thinking he was gonna fly off. So he's like on dancer, and he goes and then that's it.
And he flew off in his mind. You know,
maybe
because we can't really. I mean. That ending is so fucking wackadoodle. Like it was the best ending. I mean, the ending starts with him getting like chased through the streets like Frankenstein, and and then he comes across his brother's house. You know, calls up his brother, goes to his brother's house. The people track him down there, and then he goes off, and they're the cause of him moving. I was like, why? I mean, at this point, he's already murdered a bunch of people or whatever. Just fucking run those guys over, you know? Like, you know, you're going to jail or whatnot. But he
torches and pitchforks be damned.
Exactly.
Eat him.
And I thought he was like, did he stab the father or not?
His brother?
No. The other guy. Like, there's that father who's the daughter comes up and says, don't hurt him, don't hurt him, don't get Santa. And then the knife comes out and then like falls off, and she gives the knife to him. Then he runs off, and I swear to God, I heard him go like, you know, actually stabbed the guy as he ran off, you know.
But I don't know. I really don't know.
Yeah.
I know he truly doesn't give a shit about the adults.
Mm-hmm.
Or at least adults who don't care about Christmas. He is definitely in it for the kids.
Mm-hmm.
But not all of them, because if you have impure thoughts or you have bad hygiene.
Like, I want a subscription to Penthouse.
Yes.
Exactly. I laughed so hard. little brat
and of course that kid was probably on his naughty list.
And he was the first house that he targeted,
right?
So yeah.
And it was sort of, I mean, it was weird a little bit that he was the whole time he was like, you've seen all those kids, like he knew all the kids, like the kids all knew who he was or whatever, walking down the street. That's not, I'm sorry, I live in suburbia. No, like when I was a kid, I did not know who my next door neighbor was.
Random adults.
Like, yeah.
Unless the only thing that I can think of though, that would have made it like palatable to like the parents and whatever, is that he did work at a toy factory. So maybe he like always brought them stuff from the factory. I mean, that could be, and I think they really want to like drive it home that this guy just, he really like that moment he saw daddy and mommy, or sorry, Santa and mommy, like his brain just didn't go any further. I think he just was sealed in that age for the rest of his life.
Yeah. I like I said, I think he has a little bit of, maybe autism or something. He's something's a little off with him,
right?
Mentally, that not just like mentally messed up as a, but maybe like functioning with his brain. Because when apparently the biggest deal was with him and the was it the brother, was the brother didn't believe in Santa, you know, or whatever.
Yeah,
told him that Santa wasn't real, that was daddy, you know, right? So he, like, from the whole time, he's held this grudge that, like, his brother sort of ruined Christmas for him, as well as didn't believe in Santa, you know, or whatever. So, I mean, there was a lot of, and he wouldn't even go to Thanksgiving dinner at one point, you know, right?
Right. But you do notice that, okay, the wife of the brother, she was, like, very much like, okay, you've got to get over this. Like, it's the holidays, let's be, because it starts at Thanksgiving, it's like, you know, it's Thanksgiving, please try to get along with your brother, blah, blah, blah. But the kids are all like, oh, is Uncle Harry coming over? I mean, the kids freaking love this guy.
Right.
But he just can't deal with adults.
The dad was a douchebag anyway, though. Like, he was talking so much crap about this son. I was like, I'm sitting there like, if my old man, I mean, I wouldn't care if it was both of our kids. He's so lame. He's so lame. I mean, like our kid, he's so lame. I hated that guy. He was a douche.
Well, I will say, you want to hear who auditioned for the role of Philip's wife? Here's some fun ones. So I don't know who Carla Borelli is. Patricia Hodges, Glenn Close auditioned.
Wow.
That could have been a career changer.
JoBeth Williams. And
that I could see.
That I could see because she did Poltergeist like right after this, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. And Lindsay Krause, who is that the chick from, is that the professor from Buffy, if I'm right?
I don't remember, but the name is very familiar.
Yeah. But those people auditioned for that role. And the other guys, like the guy who got it, for Philip was Jeffrey DeMunn, and I love him, by the way. If you guys ever watched the show Billions on Showtime, he is the father of what's that guy's name? He's the father of Paul Giamatti on the show.
Okay. I've never seen that one.
Yeah, it's really good. But he's just wonderful. I looked at his picture and I'm like, that guy looks very familiar. Who is he? And even when I saw him, I was like, I know that guy. And so that's where I know him. Brandon Maggart, I guess. That is a terrible name, by the way. Bad. Is the, because it reminded me, like, when I thought it said maggot. And I was like, ew.
Yeah.
But he had been in, like, Dressed to Kill and a few other movies. He hasn't done anything since 2007, though, sadly. And Lewis Jackson, who directed it, hasn't done anything since. Though I did hear some awesome ideas that he had for movies that he was trying to raise money for that never happened. One was a cult that tries to kill people who drive SUVs while they're talking on their cell phones.
Oh. So he's
very specific.
Yeah, so that had to have been fairly recently then, at least right. The last 20 years.
Let's see, when was that? Because it was a Film Threat interview that I read, Film Threat interview. But yeah, no, it was, let me pull it up. But I thought, you know, like, this is a fun movie for a movie I never really knew much about, you know, like, it's a movie I might actually watch every, Christmas, because it's got that kind of feel to it.
One of the things that always strikes me about this movie that, okay, if you didn't read the IMDb and the whole deranged guy Christmas killing spree, the first, like, I want to even say like three quarters of it don't seem, and you kind of alluded to this, they don't seem like they're going to be dark. Like, it seems like it's goofy. It's got a little magical, and, you know, it seems very almost kid friendly until he finally, like, murders somebody.
Right.
And that's really just, like, maybe the last 20, 30 minutes that he gets, he starts going all nutso. But it does not feel like, if you didn't know if it was a horror movie, and right, you didn't know that it was a slasher, you'd be watching the first part and just be like, yeah, this is just a Christmas movie about some maladjusted dude.
Right, who thinks he's Santa Claus, which, yeah, technically could be Miracle on 34th Street, you know?
Yes. And if you think about it too, guys, I mean, the whole idea of Santa is really creepy as hell. Uh-huh. You know, that a guy breaks into your house through your chimney, and, you know, it's just, it's a weird idea anyway. So,
and then you threaten to manipulate it all year.
Exactly. You're like blackmailed pretty much into being good. Just for, right, that payoff at the end of the year. And it's, well, I mean, it's a really crazy kind of thing to start out with. So I don't think this is even like a subversion of the Santa Claus tale, really.
By the way, his other idea, and I love this idea too. If I had a lot of funding, like if I had money, I would contact Lewis and be like, dude, we need you to make one more movie, you know, because, you know, you can't leave just on Christmas Evil. Make something else. But this one sounds like it could work even today. This is another is about a man who gets hit with radiation and finds himself growing so cold only electricity can help him warm, and he becomes an electric junkie causing blackouts.
Kind of sounds like that movie Crank in a, like, a weird, like, very,
oh yeah,
yeah, yeah.
Maybe.
Okay. Is he not Jason Statham though?
Yeah, that is true. Yeah, that is true.
So yeah, those were in 2005, by the way. That's when, okay, his when he came up the, but wow, still 2005 of people talking on their cell phones. Really, was that even, I don't remember everybody freaking out about that back then.
That was maybe like the beginning of that.
He was getting so mad at that in the beginning. Imagine how he is like now.
Oh yeah.
It's got to be even worse. But yeah, I would love to see him do something else, you know, or whatever, Christmas Evil 2, you know. Sadly, they would reboot it before they would do a sequel these days, only because, yes, so many people have never heard of Christmas Evil. They'll never want to do a, you know, Christmas Evil 2, you know. They'd want to, yeah, do a reboot. It could
and
work.
They'd make it all, like, slick and glam, and it would, maybe, not be the same.
I think CGI everywhere.
I think it could still work. There's still some aspects of it that, if done on a low budget, you know, or like this, I could see, I wouldn't want like Blumhouse doing it, because, you know, we know how those remakes turn out. They're just completely different than the,
yeah,
than the original. And I would want it to stick close enough to the original, about a man who goes insane on Christmas and thinks he's Santa Claus and whatever. And maybe they would add your idea of maybe he is actually a helper, you know, maybe,
yeah,
maybe a guy moves to town and he, you know, and he claims he's Santa, and then but then he starts killing people. And
I think the problem would be, though, is that was a pretty original idea back then, but now, like, there may not be a whole lot of movies, like freestanding movies, that are about killer Santas. But there are a shit ton of anthologies that have a killer, right, Santa. And I think it's just the whole idea of a killer Santa. I think people are really desensitized to that now, because it's just like, oh, another killer Santa.
Well, I almost think it's on its own genre, you know, like,
yeah,
but I like that, you know, I like it being its own. Like nowadays, how many Krampus movies do we have, you know?
Oh yeah, quite a few.
So we have Krampus now, and then like back in the day, Krampus was like nobody talked about him, you know. All of a sudden, like one person makes a Krampus movie, it's like there's gonna be a million Krampus movies. We have a bunch of elf movies. I mean, there's no way to do Christmas horror without it being something that's already been done before. So I
Dead Man. That's one of my favorites. Like just for its originality.
Was that set in Christmas?
Ginger Dead Man? Yeah.
I just watched that last week for the first time, all the way through.
Oh
my God. I have to see the rest of them and the Evil Bong movie.
Yeah.
I was at, I went on like one of the Full Moon Road shows back in 2008, I want to say it was 2009, maybe. Charles Band was promoting, you know, talking about Ginger Dead Man and working with Gary Busey. And he had some fun, amazing stories for Gary. Gary was just hard to work with, but you know, you kind of know that when you hire him, you know, so they were already expecting it, but it was wonderful. You know, the stories or whatever, it's a terrible, you know, terrible movie, but I love it. Like we've talked about it on Indie Film Cafe last season. So, you know, if you guys want to hear that one, I think it was me and Paul and maybe Lenore or somebody watched that movie, and it was so amazing. It was so fun. But that movie is good. I don't remember it being a Christmas movie. Now I'll have to rewatch it. I know Paul would rewatch it in a second because he has is the hugest crush on Robin Sidney, you know.
Oh.
Well, she's really cute, you know, like, and I've met her. She's really sweet. So, I would love to see more Ginger Dead Man movies, but they're not working on that right now. They're doing more, Deadly 10 stuff. So trying to finish that all up. Anywho, go ahead.
I was going to say, back to this movie, the toy store throws the most rockin' freaking office holiday party ever. Right? I've never worked anywhere that had a party that awesome.
That big old bar that they had there with a bartender and everything. I was like, what is this?
I know they have a DJ and everybody seems to like each other. They're all dancing and getting along. I'm like, this is drunk. This isn't the way this goes. This isn't an office Christmas party. Like nobody's looking at their watch. And it's like, and then the thought that it's being held on Christmas Eve is like bizarre to me. Like all these people would rather hang out with their coworkers than their families on Christmas Eve.
Well, I don't know. I guess it depends on what kind of family you have.
True. but then the other party that he goes to that's more of a family-oriented kind of thing, he's just looking in and stuff. I mean, I thought that was really sweet and cool. Like, those guys, you thought those guys were going to pick on him.
Yeah.
Because they see him looking in the window, and they go out, and they're like, hey, Santa, you want to come in? Whatever. And then, like, all this, and you think it's going to just be a bloodbath. And then the kids run in and he's got presents for them. And everybody's just like, you know, all the adults are just like smiling and like, thank you, Santa, you know? And it's like, he made that party super magical. Now, can you imagine being one of those people and reading the papers the next day and finding out that that guy killed a bunch of people in town that night?
He made it kind of creepy and awkward, like at the end of his little speech, like to all the kids about being good you know, or I'm going to give you bad things. And then everybody's quiet, like, oh, and he's like, ha, that's, ha, 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 ha. And then everybody's like,
that's Santa, man.
That cracked me up though, because like, I was just like you, I thought this was going to turn into a bloodbath. And I thought like, he was going to start murdering people. And there, then he's like dancing with them and singing, you know, like along, like, it was like, where the hell? Like, actually, you know what's funny is I was watching this at my parents' house, right? So my mom walked in while I was watching that part. And if you look at that movie from that perspective, she was like, oh, what's this? Like, nice little like thing. And I'm like, oh, it's Christmas Evil. And she's like, what? And I'm like, it's a horror film. And she's like, yeah, this is not being on my TV right now. Like, you gotta go. You know, but like that changed, the tone changed, because like it looks like a like very sweet scene in a movie.
Yeah.
Or whatever.
It does. And there are many scenes that look like they could be sweet scenes, or like, or just even the fact that like he's, his whole apartment is decorated in Christmas stuff and he just really loves Christmas. And like, you know, he doesn't let his jackass coworkers kind of get him down too much, you know, at first, you know, I mean, like you kind of feel like it's something like it might turn to where like he can make people have the Christmas spirit, but he doesn't. But did you notice when he, this actually is one of my, I don't know, I'm claustrophobic. And so this always gives me the heebie-jeebies when he tries to go down the chimney of his, of Frank's house, and he gets stuck. I freak out. Like, that makes me freak out so bad. Just that idea. I mean, I'm sorry, but I also, when I was also 8 years old, sitting in, six, I think, watching Gremlins, how I found out there was no Santa Claus, Phoebe Cates. Oh. Fucking atrocious story about her dad going down the chimney.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
But when he does get into Frank's house, you notice he leaves presents for the kids before he goes and murders their father.
Aww. Well, that was, I think, the sweetest thing of the whole thing, too, because, like, things could have gone weird or darker if he, like, if he was somebody who like actually killed children too, right, or something.
Yeah. You know?
But he always was like, I mean, I think it goes from him being nice to all the kids around town except for the naughty ones, which he looks out for or whatever. But like he's being very nice to all the kids. You know what I mean? Like he cares about the kids. He wants them to actually believe in Santa, in my opinion. You know, like that's how I view it. I think he just wants in a way, he kind of embodies the spirit of Christmas, you know, except
just has a weird way of executing it.
Yeah. Except when people are naughty to him, you know, then he'll be naughty.
Not just naughty to him, though. So the two guys who he killed outside of the church.
Right.
Oh, I love that.
If you notice, there were two guys and two, like, their wives coming out of the church. And the two guys, like, I mean, they didn't do anything to him. They just said, yeah, we're going to give presents to this hospital. Do you have enough presents? Well, they're just like, it doesn't really fucking matter. We're giving presents. It's great PR. That's why he targets them. But then when he gets to the church, they're making fun of him. And so is one of the wives. The other wife is like, hey, you guys, you're going too far. Notice he only kills the three.
Mm-hmm.
He spares the wife who was actually standing up for him.
Mm-hmm.
But so he really, I don't think it has to do with him necessarily. It's like, you know, those two didn't do anything to him to start out with. No, they did when they were making fun of him. But I don't know that it's really if they wrong him or they just wrong Christmas.
Right. See, that's the thing. Like when you kind of embody the spirit of Christmas, if somebody doesn't respect Christmas, I'm just wondering why he murdered his coworker. Was it Frank? You know, like why did
Frank? Oh, because Frank, he said that he was going to go away for a long weekend and he needed somebody to cover his shift. Couldn't find anybody. And then he had worked all day. Harry had worked all day in the office. And then he called him. He's like, hey, you said you missed the line. Well, good news. You're going to be working the line tonight. You're taking my shift. And then when he gets off shift, not only did the guy stick him with the shift, but that guy didn't go out of town. He was at the bar, like the bar where I'm guessing all the toy store workers go or whatever. And so he knew for sure that the guy, you know, he had just screwed him totally.
Yeah. Well, no, I got that. But like, I don't think that warrants somebody's death. I don't know. That might have been a little bit much on that. Like that's. And I don't think that was like that didn't destroy the vision of Christmas. That was just a fucked up thing. Somebody could shoot somebody. I feel like that was sort of a little bit too far for his character. Like, you're not saying like him murdering people that are out on the street. We've established why he murders people, but You know what I mean? Like, I just.
Well, but you know what? If you even go back to that, if we think about the two like executives or whatever who said they were going to give gifts or whatever, and they didn't really, they didn't care to do a head count. They didn't care to make sure, but they still were like giving gifts
right
to the kids' hospital. They didn't have to even do that.
Right. So, yeah. And then later he gives all the gifts off to the hospital and everything. It looks like he's the, you know, he's the good guy of the whole thing when he's really just a really kind of a fucked up person.
Okay. But he did go to that Moss kid's house and took all the presents. So he didn't kill the pervy kid with bad hygiene, but he did take that kid's presents and gave them to, so he's almost like a Robin Hood character at that point. He gave them to the kids, the sick kids.
I actually thought of that too. Is he like, I actually came up with that thought in my head. Is he a Robin? Is he the Robin Hood of Christmas, you know?
Yeah.
You know, and so it was, it, the whole movie was interesting. I enjoyed it from start to finish. I mean, maybe there were things I would probably have to watch it more than once to really like pick up on all of the little things in the movie, you know. Plus I would love to, I think next year sometime I'm going to buy the Blu-ray because the one I saw was on YouTube and it was not a
grainy.
The one I sent you guys was grainy. And then I actually did look on YouTube and there was a little bit better one, but like, I mean,
I watched still... it on Prime. That's actually the VHS retro style. Like it even has like, I mean, it's in 4:3 and it even has the title screen. You better watch out. Because that's nice. How I like watching stuff like this. But I would love to get the Blu-ray just to get the commentary and interviews and that type of stuff.
So you like to watch it on like the actual VHS if you can.
Yeah, I like VHS formats. In fact, a lot of times when I'm watching older movies, even if I have them on Blu-ray, sometimes I'll go on YouTube just to see if somebody has a VHS rip of it. I'm just that kind of girl sometimes.
You probably did that book for Blood Rage when we did Blood Rage, didn't you?
No, I actually have the Arrow release of that one. Okay. So I did watch that. Yeah.
But yeah, so this was, I mean, honestly, for Christmas, and I would not call this a Christmas slasher, even though it does have some slashing involved. It's not set up like that. Like this is not,
no.
Even the director said in his interview, I believe, that he is not a big fan of the killing virgins and doing all that. Like he wants to have some kind of political, you know, message to it. Like a lot of the message was about consumerism, you know, mm-hmm. and how we as a society are getting very greedy, especially with the toys and all that other stuff. So I love what he did with it. You know, I respect mm-hmm. everything. This would normally, if I watched this when I was a kid, I would have been bored.
Yes.
To be honest.
Until the very end, you would have been like, yawn.
Yeah, until like the last like maybe 30 minutes of the movie where he like goes on the killing spree. I would have been like, this is not like, this is not a horror film, you know? And it's not set up that way. Like there's no 10 minutes, you know, the first 10 minutes there's a kill, you know, or whatever.
Right.
And every 10 minutes, because that's what it is nowadays. This movie is a slower burn horror film with psychological, you know, like twists. I mean, especially them looking in the mirror the whole time. Yeah. You know, and you're just like, okay, I can see this guy like changing into this like thing that he's becoming, you know, and he's becoming the like embodiment of everything he loves, you know, and he's taking it a little bit too far, you know? And so, I mean, it was wonderful. So, so with that being said, we usually do our, let's see, our, ratings around this time, you know, is there anything last things that you guys wanted to discuss? Anything that you guys felt like needed to be like mentioned? Joe, nothing? Okay. Yeah. All right, so let's do the ratings. We do a 1 to 5 star scale, 1 being bad and 5 being good. Exact opposite of the 10 indie film cafe, which confuses the hell out of
everybody, including me. Yes.
Yes. So, or what do you guys do on Sexploitation Sleazecast? Do you do like a bunch of stuff?
Boner ratings.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. So Rebecca does another show on Indie Film Cafe called Sexploitation Sleazecast, with Paul. I love it. And
yes, very fun.
I'll get you on as a guest.
You can always come on.
They need more people on as guests, because I mean, I love hearing you guys, but you know, it'd be really funny to drag other people into these terrible.
Yeah, I was gonna say, there's some, the last movie that we did, I think Paul was like, thank God that I found you, Rebecca, because I think you're the only person who would have done a podcast on this movie with me.
He was originally trying to find a porn star who was okay with doing it. And our friend Ophelia sort of seemed interested, but then in doing it, but unfortunately I don't think she necessarily got it. Like, she didn't really want to review bad porn.
right yeah,
you know, I don't know, it's one of those things.
I enjoy it greatly, yes,
exactly. And that's why we created this show, and we created Horror Blood and Coffee and Horror Film Lovers, because those are different types of horror films that people can watch that are, you know, at least 80s horror films might have some bad ones, you know, in there, you know,
lots
of bad ones. And I can't wait to dive into those. But this was our fifth quote unquote, can we call it a slasher?
I guess it is. Like, yeah, I think technically maybe not, but for all intents and purposes.
Yeah. So this is I think this will be our last slasher for a bit. We'll try to do some more other horror from the 80s. And who knows? We'll see. But let's do the rating. I'm gonna go ahead and give it a 4.5 stars. That's my view. You know, I think with it being a little confusing at the end, and maybe especially like with him jetting into like fucking the stars and shit, I'm confused as hell. Like, I think it was a badass ending. Don't get me wrong. It just like makes the movie go like, just like you thought, like, is there something more to it that we don't know? Or whatever. And maybe that's what he wanted you to think. But I don't know. I give it 4.5. What about you, Joe?
You know, I'm going to, for right now, because I do want to rewatch it and think about everything that's been discussed during this episode. So I'm going to give it like 2.5. I'll go with a 2.5 for right now until I watch it again. So.
Okay. So give us an updated version, like updated review sometime on one of the next episodes. Okay.
Right. Her asterisk score.
Yeah. All right. What about you, Rebecca?
I'm going to go with a 4. This is one, like I said, I do watch every year. I like it a lot. I like that we can have like this conversation about it. And even as the ending was going on, I was like, my kid was walking in the room. I'm like, shh. I'm like, I need to watch this because, you know, I'm doing it for a podcast. And my kid was like, well, isn't he just Santa Claus? That's the way I always saw it. You know, like, I mean, and so there are so many different interpretations just from that ending. If it didn't have that ending, I think it would be more straightforward. But I love that it has just that like Cheech and Chong drug fuel like ending. And that's exactly what I thought of his van too. It reminded me of Cheech and Chong.
Like I said, it does make sense that the director came up with the idea when he was smoking pot. I mean,
yeah,
that's when some people have the best ideas. And
I would have said something a little harder, but yeah. he wants to stick with the joint. We'll believe him on that.
Sure. It was something, you know, like you said, there could have been cocaine in the snow.
In the snow.
It was something natural.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. However, that's a lot of fucking cocaine then. I don't know.
Yeah.
That's, you know, I think that would be more than the actual budget of the film was.
Yes. Agreed.
But no, the movie is wonderful. The fact that they, did you know that this film actually was distributed by Troma? Can you believe that?
No, that does make sense though, because Troma did a lot of their not own movies. I don't know how to say that, but you know, movies that they just distributed and didn't produce.
Right. I'm not saying it was produced by Michael.
You don't
Michael
have
Hers
the
and Lloyd Kaufman.
Yeah, Lloyd Kaufman. Yeah.
Yeah, but they did distribute it originally. Then it got distributed by Synapse, and then eventually Vinegar Syndrome picked it up for the Blu-ray release and DVD combo. So I want to buy that at some point. Maybe we will sort of revisit this at some point, you know. You know, we'd have to do another Christmas time, but maybe like
I was going to say, it's going to have to be next December because I don't watch Christmas movies if it's not December.
No, it will be a December, but it won't be like next December. Yeah. I want us to try to get different ones. We'll have to do a revisit or something, or maybe a Patreon release during the holidays, you know, or something. We'll do a Patreon only, podcast where they have to hear it from, that. So we'll see. I mean, it'll be cool. So we got to figure out what's going to be next. And I don't want to do another poll because we had a bad, we just get the two popular ones. Like, people want to go with the popular stuff. So we want to try to find more like indie stuff. Like not indie, but one day I want
to smaller
Burning, but like, once again, I want to try to stay away from, slashers for a little bit. So what is a good I guess January would be,
we'll think about it. We'll think about it, mull it over, and we'll come up with something.
Okay. Yeah, Joe, think of something too. Like, if you wanna, there's something you've been dying to kind of do for 80s horror. That's all the criteria has to be. It's gotta be an 80s horror film, non-slasher for now. But there are a ton of that 80s was slashers on. So
I've got a couple ideas for January. So we'll mull it over.
All right. So we'll ask Julianne too. I'm sure she'll be back for the next one. She definitely wants to come back, but it's just been difficult.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you guys so much for joining me for the show. Thank you all for listening. Check back next, next month in January, where we'll have whatever, we'll figure out what we're going to do. Joe, real quick, do you have any podcasts you want to promote?
Oh, my podcast, Any Last Words, is Monday through Friday, 8 o'clock California time on YouTube, Facebook, and Twitch TV.
Awesome. What about you, Rebecca?
Sexploitation Sleazecast, Not Quite Final Girl on YouTube, and In the Mic of Madness on YouTube and Google and iTunes.
Definitely. And keep checking back at this podcast, this Indie Film Cafe, because there's going to be a ton of stuff, especially in January. It's going to be busy. So just get ready. So thank you guys so much. Hope you guys enjoyed listening, and have a good night. Bye.
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 Horror.